together. Thank you very much. I would like to begin with, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2252. Kim, since it's been a while, do you want to give us a quick update on what we're doing here?
Sure.
Just to make sure.
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2252 does a number of things, including modifying the definition of international trade, increasing the governor-appointed members to the International Trade Commission, and modifying some of those appointments. In addition, in front of the committee today are the Dash 3 amendments, which deletes the requirement that the commission conduct a study of job training, and other technical education programs offered by public and private institutions to ensure that programs meet the needs of Oregon, of the Oregon business community.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Representative March?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2252
take it from there.
Thank you, Representative March. Representative March has moved the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2252. Any discussion?
I just wanted to clarify for the listening audience that the reason I proposed these amendments was to delete possible overlap and conflict with Bureau of Labor and Industries and the Community College Workforce Board and other boards that may do the same, are required to do the same. This deleting that requirement will not prohibit the board or trade and economic, the Trade Commission from making recommendations. It just doesn't require that they do so.
Any other discussion? Any objections? Hearing no objection, the motion carries. Representative Berger?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2252 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger has made that motion to move House Bill 2252 as amended to the House floor with a due pass. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. We'll close the... I need a carrier on the bill. Representative Berger.
I'm happy to carry it.
Okay, Representative Berger will be carrying the bill. And that's Berger with a B.
Thank you,
we'll
Madam
close the
Chair.
Work session on House Bill 2252. Thank you very much. I will now open an informational meeting for the House Trade and Economic Development Committee. And we have with us today Duncan Wise, President of the Oregon Business Council. Welcome, Mr. Wise. He's going to give us an informational overview on the Oregon Business Plan, which was handed out to us. I don't know if everybody's still got theirs, but it's huge.
So
thank you. And for the record, you need to state your name and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Duncan Wise. I'm the president of the Oregon Business Council. I want to thank the committee very much for the opportunity to appear before you this afternoon. I'm really delighted. What I'd like to do is give you an overview on the Oregon Business Plan, the report stepping up that we've been working on for over a year. And it's really will be a two-part presentation. The first will be just the overview of the plan, the basic framework of the plan, a discussion of our economy, some of the key trends that we see. And then I'll talk about the business plan initiatives, the 12 initiatives that we adopted in January after the leadership summit in December, and talk through those initiatives and how we're moving forward on those. So that,
okay.
And then I've been asked to keep it reasonably brief and then take any questions and discussion of where we go and maybe how we can work together. Really delighted to have this opportunity. Before I begin, let me just give you a quick overview on who I am in the Business Council. I know there are a lot of different groups and probably worth giving a little bit of a picture of how we all relate. The Business Council is a group of about 40 CEOs of Oregon businesses from throughout the state, a pretty good cross-section of industries. They tend to be larger companies. And the group gathers to focus on issues that they think are critically important to Oregon's future. Tend to select a relatively few number of issues in any given time. And we tend to focus more on the policy area. We're not set out frameworks for policy and recommendations. Our members like to get directly involved in issues. If you'd like to meet with some of them on any of these issues that we'll be talking about, a number of them are very actively involved and would love to work with you as you do your work. We value our partnerships with the legislators and others. So that's a quick overview. About a year ago, a little over a year ago now, the directors decided that the economy was a very important topic of conversation. We obviously are always focusing on the economy. With the downturn and the recession and the implications both for jobs and public sector services, decided it was important to take a hard look at the economy. And so they asked me to develop a process, which became the Oregon Business Plan, to really take a look at where the economy was going, what was going to be important as we move forward, and ultimately to set forth a set of recommendations on what we thought would build and sustain the long-term health of the economy. And that's really what the Oregon Business Plan Stepping Up is all about. So let me start with an overview on the plan and a little bit of picture of the economy. What the objectives of the business plan, so much for this presentation.
Hold a cake before I start. I love it.
Actually, it was meant to go the other way.
All right. So what are our objectives? What we set out to do is, first of all, we wanted to paint a picture. We think that our directors felt the economy is in the midst of change. We wanted to talk about what the changes are facing Oregon and try to provide you and the rest of the state a compelling picture of what it could be as we look forward to the years ahead. We wanted to identify what we consider critical for our economic success, the long-term economic success of Oregon, identify opportunities for action and to set priorities. We wanted, as we do that, to provide a unified voice on business, and I'll talk about that a little bit more, and we want to strengthen the partnerships between business and the public sector. So when we started out over a year ago, those were the objectives we set out. How do we put the plan together? We created a steering committee for this plan, and I think this is pretty important. The business plan steering committee was a pretty good cross-section of business leaders from a variety of different perspectives. They are not all Oregon Business Council members. We included the chairs of many of the major business associations in this process, and they were directly involved as we put it together. The Oregon Business Council did provide staff support for this effort. We relied on a lot of help from a lot of folks. I want to particularly mention that we worked with state government throughout the last year and the Economic Development Department, Progress Board, Employment Department, for example, all provided a huge amount of assistance, and we want to thank them for it. It was a good partnership and were very useful. We also, in the Portland region, relied on PDC and a lot of the work they had done. There was a lot of help there. And again, we drew on many of the business associations work as we put this together. And we got a nice grant along the way as well. In terms of the process, very briefly on the process, we started with a series of focus groups and interviews that we conducted with business. We really wanted to focus on business leaders' perspectives on how the economy is changing and what we need to do to build a successful future. We had a number of regional meetings around the state. Some of you participated in them, where we took a look at the trends and looked at priorities. We convened the leadership summit in December in 2002, an event I will not forget for quite a while. A lot more folks turned out than we ever dreamed of. Great interest in this topic, 1,300 people at the convention center. And again, as I mentioned, we have a steering committee that adopted the plan in this last January. Now we're working on follow-up and implementation. And what we hope to do is have a meeting mid-year where we reconvene, hopefully not with quite so large a gathering, but to talk about progress on the initiatives. And so we are looking forward to working with you as we go forward on these initiatives and report back on progress. Now, let's talk about the plan's framework. We started this process. If you're doing any plan, you need to ask yourself, what are our goals here? What are we trying to accomplish? And we looked to the state's plan, the Oregon Progress Board strategic plan, Oregon Shines, as the basic framework for what we were trying to do. And in Oregon Shines, there are three broad goals. There are goals for the economy, quality jobs, which is really where we were focused, on the community, safe, caring, engaged community, and a healthy, sustainable surroundings. The Progress Board recognizes that these three are interconnected. We agree with that, but our focus here in this process was on jobs and the economy. That's where we put our energy. That's what business leaders felt they knew most about, and we wanted to contribute this to the state process, the Progress Board, your processes, with that particular focus on jobs and the economy. As we put that together, and I'll talk more about this, we put together a framework. We call it 4 P's for prosperity. As we interviewed our business leaders and tried to understand what was important, we came up with a framework. American. It's a little cute, I know, but it helps you remember them. Four P's: pioneering innovation, people, place, productivity. And those four elements, we believe, together make up what is required to build a healthy, sustainable economy as we move forward. And I'll be talking more about this framework as we go here. There is a fifth P we identified in this process called public finance, and we do have a vision there that we've long supported. And the vision on public finance is a vision which we believe connects public services with the economy. It goes like this: believe that if you have a strong, healthy economy, that provides the best source of revenue for public services. And if we can generate revenue for public services, we can then support the education, infrastructure, and other needs that are so important to support a healthy economy. And if you get this right, as we did during the 90s, the two reinforce each other. When you go off the circle, as we are seeing right now, we can see how the spiral can go the other way. And so that's the framework we use, and we come back to as we discuss this further. In terms of some trends on the economy, we were taking a long-term look at this. If you take a long-term look at Oregon and its economic performance, it's very good. We since the 80s recession, we've had a long run of steady growth, and we need to remember that as we look at the current conditions. We dodged the recession in the early 90s, and we've had a very long period of sustained growth, outperforming the nation about 80%. Of the time. In the last 10 years, 350,000 new jobs, again, dodged the 91 recession, and incomes, our per capita income, a key goal, rose from 90 to 95% of U.S. average. And so it's been the 90s were a very good time. Now, of course, that all came to a significant and arguably a very abrupt end in the early 2000s period, and we've really led the nation in many respects into the recession. We've analyzed this at quite a bit of depth, and the main reason we can see for the recession is our dependence on durable goods manufacturing. This is a great time to take stock in how Oregon is performing and what matters for economic growth. But we need to realize after a long period of growth, the industries that we've done so well in have gone into a strong recession, high tech and other durable goods manufacturing, and that really has been the source of a major source of why this recession is so severe in Oregon. I would stress, however, as we look at those industries, that those industries remain very vital and vibrant as we look forward. Actually, in high tech, for example, even though we've seen a significant downturn, it still outperforms high tech in the rest of the country. And so I don't want to leave the impression that we've just completely collapsed in Oregon as we move into a national recession. I think there's a lot of reason to think that we have good prospects if we put all the pieces together. So we experienced the recession. I would point out that the recession has hit other parts of the West, and again, it's not unique to Oregon. It's not pleasant. It's a major challenge facing the state. But I also I don't want to suggest that it's only in Oregon where this recession is happening. So why have we done, I think arguably if you take a longer term picture, done well in creating jobs over the last decade? What we concluded as we looked at Oregon's economy and the Oregon business plan is that we need to understand the clusters of industry that particularly are strong here. What we conclude is success in economic development, economic strategy, isn't random. If you take a look at the economy, about two-thirds of the jobs in Oregon look about the same as jobs in other places, but the restaurants, the grocery stores, hospitals, those kinds of jobs, those jobs are all the same. But there's a third of the job called the traded sector, which vary greatly among regions. And it's those jobs that we really need to pay attention to, those industries that really build the economic strength of the state. We call them the traded sectors, and those are the sectors that sell goods and services to other parts of the country and compete with other places in the world. Those bring in the income, the revenues from elsewhere that support the suppliers, the government services, and the other two-thirds of the job that, again, are that serve the state either direct to the traded sector or to the consumers of the state. To focus on economic strategy, we really suggest that it's important to focus on what's happening in the traded sector and what their needs are going forward as they compete nationally and globally. an intensely competitive world, because it's putting the ingredients together as a region that support those sectors that really enable us to be successful going forward economically. So in terms of thinking about economic strategy, our basic perspective is that what you want to do in the traded sector is focus on building the clusters that are here and build their competitiveness and understand their needs and respond to those needs. In terms of the suppliers and other the local services, including government, the challenge is to become very efficient and understand the needs of those clusters so that we really are putting a package together that supports the traded sector needs. And so it's a way of organizing, I think, our thinking in terms of the economic strategy that I think helps us see how the pieces fit together. Maybe pause there for a second, but is that... now as we look at the traded sectors, we stress that the success is not random. What we find in these sectors is that we have industries, closely related firms, gather together in close proximity, places, states, regions within the state specialize. And what we found is that happens all over the world, and Oregon is no exception. So what are we good at? What have we turned out to be good at as a state? The big four that we would identify are high technology, which has grown dramatically over the last 15 years or so. It's now by far the largest sector in the state. Forestry and wood products remains a very vibrant, vital sector for the state. Agriculture, food processing, and metals transportation equipment are four of the big ones that we need to pay attention to. There are many others, I would stress. We have identified a lot, but these are the big ones. Within each of these, there are subsectors, and you can again, we can identify specialization that goes on within each of those major sectors. So what we went about to do is really to interview individual businesses and representatives of those clusters to find out what their issues were as they looked to Oregon and their economic future. And we went through a process of interviews, basically asking them, talk about your business, tell us what your challenges are, and then got into the question of tell us what Oregon can do to make a difference to you competitively. As we interviewed these, we came out with surprising consistency of the issues that they faced. We boiled this down into five key trends that we identified in this process. The first trend was change. In all the sectors, all these traded sectors, businesses, what we heard time and again was the business is dramatically different today than it was 10 years ago, and the expectation was with technology and that would continue on into the foreseeable future. Change was a constant in all the sectors, whether it's agriculture, forest products, or high technology. Second, related to change, was restructuring. We saw all kinds of mergers, acquisitions, reshifting, change of all kinds going on, and a lot of that related to the third trend, which again loud and clear was globalization across sector after sector. And the one word I heard more than I can want to remember was the word China. Again and again, people were focusing on the competitive challenge that China presents to us. But it's more than just China. That what we heard throughout the process was that as we see the globalization of business, there are other places on Earth right now that can provide low-cost labor in particular and produce commodity products in ways that the United States simply aren't going to be competitive on in the future. And that change is causing companies to seek low-cost areas for production and for their own production processes, and I think creates an enormous challenge for the United States that we just need to acknowledge and recognize. And as we position ourselves, if we want to continue to have high-wage jobs, we've got to recognize that those are going to become based on skills, knowledge, and capacities to provide value-added products, not based on commodity production in the future in Oregon, because a lot of that work is moving elsewhere.
I have a question,
yeah.
Mr. Weiss.
Yeah.
When you listed the four sectors that we need to focus on, and high tech was listed at $13 billion, forestry was at $4 billion, there it is. What you said that's changed... What did it used to be?
Oh, it was. If you go back, I'll get you those numbers. I don't have. This is a real summary version of this. But if you went to oh, back 20 years,
right.
you would have had a much, much higher percentage on forest products. We've seen in 1970, I'd hate to, off the top of my head, you would have seen forest products and ag being more at 50-60% of the total,
right?
Maybe more, and then metals. And
you can get me those.
I think in the main report we actually have those, and I'll come back. No, we've seen a broad, and I want to stress that's all. You know, again, on the forest products side, we continue to have a very strong forest products industry, and I know a lot of people say, well, suggested that somehow that, you know, with the high tech diversification, that the natural resource industry is no longer important. That's just not true. In many of the communities, it's still a very, very large employer, and Oregon happens to be a great place to grow trees.
And to provide two and three.
And so that if we're smart about it, those can continue to be great sources of jobs, even while we diversify. I think everyone, including the forest products industry, historically has encouraged diversification, and I think we should. But at the same time, it doesn't mean we should consider. You know, we need to recognize we still have opportunities in those sectors as well.
Correct. Did you have a question? Okay,
Duncan. This represents $22-23 billion. What is the gross domestic product for
Borg? About 60. Okay. No, this of the state. Let's see. I should have Joe here with me. No, it's about 60 billion, 60, 70 billion. But again,
well, this is about a third.
But again, remember, this is traded. When I add the total, it has that's all the others, healthcare and all those others. And again, why we focus on these is these generate additional.
They're not just.
Yeah, these are the sectors we think have spin-off and to the rest of the economy.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. Go ahead.
And again, I don't want to. There are other sectors besides these that are growing. Again, we highlight these as just examples. Now, let me just move through again a little bit about what we've learned. The first, in facing the trend of globalization, technology, and intense. Again, I can't stress how intense the global competition is. And just let me give you a couple examples on this issue of China that I heard around the state. Again, you know, you probably heard a lot in the manufacturing sector, sort of in, whether it's metals or high technology. But in Medford, Representative Vicky, you probably remember hearing that apples now are from China are competing with pears in Medford. It was pears, actually, in Medford. And, you know, and so, again, a significant competitive threat. In Prineville, Les Schwab's recycling center can no longer compete with new tires produced in China. And so they're trying to figure out what to do with their recycled tires and how to innovate and change to be responsive. So it's a pretty consistent pattern of you know, intense competition. And again, the question in light of these challenges, are we going to give up? What are we going to do? How are people responding? And we found actually what was very exciting in this process is people are responding. And again, across sectors, they're responding in quite consistent ways. And the first and most foremost, and one I think you heard if the OCED folks were visiting you last week, and I'm sure they did, is innovation. And innovation is critical in an environment of intense competition. One way we can do better is to be quicker in designing new products, taking them to market, designing new processes, and moving quicker than others. And again, we saw that just all over the state, examples of that. So in Southern Oregon, to stick with that example, you see Harry and David innovating like crazy to find adding value to the fruits in that area, and taking, and again, in agriculture across the state, examples of adding value to find new ways of doing business. And moving up market, if you will, to find new and better ways. We heard it in Central Oregon in the wood products industry out there, where they actually are importing lumber from New Zealand because they have such a knowledge-intensive cluster of folks there on some of their specialty wood products that they can actually be competitive because they've got the talent, knowledge, and marketing skills in Central Oregon to do that. Certainly here in high technology, where we have an extraordinary series of clusters doing leading-edge work. And again, I think Oregonians may not understand, and for example, the high-tech sector, just how incredible the work going on here is. For example, in Corvallis, Hewlett-Packard, where we visited, they're clearly one of the leading centers within the Hewlett-Packard system for innovation, research, development, product development. Not, and Hewlett-Packard is a very innovative company, and the Corvallis Center is unusually innovative there. And the patents per capita in Corvallis are among the highest in the country. And again, you see the same story at Intel. You'll see the same story at many of our high-tech companies. Tremendous sources of innovation. We saw it in sports apparel. If you ask where in the world is innovation happening in shoes, it's Portland, Oregon. I mean, with Nike, Adidas, certainly Columbia Sportswear. Again, innovation is huge, and it's got to be a key source of competitive advantage if we want high-wage jobs in the future. The second area of focus, as we call it pioneering innovation, the second area we heard about consistently was people. Call it in another way, more commonly stated, is education. Talented people are absolutely critical to the success of the economy, and that speaks to the education systems, K-12, higher ed, arguably pre-K through life. The quality of education is important, and we heard it again and again. The talents of young people coming out of school are vital to the companies. Having good quality schools are vital for attracting talent to the state. Doing well as a people is something we have been committed to for over a decade, stated policy goal being measurably the best educated people. We don't think we can give up on that goal. It's really important, and you know that, and you're hearing a lot about it, but we heard it in this planning process. And that really brings to a third element of strategy, which, again, in all parts of the state we heard, it's about the place. To attract people, education is one quality of the place, but more broadly, we discovered there is a big battle going on in this country, and it's a battle for attracting the 20 to 35-year-olds who are in a shrinking population, the young, talented knowledge workers, and one of the battles is to attract them to your community, because if you attract them into the companies, you're going to have a lot better chance of being innovative, and we need to focus on that. Turns out the Portland metro region has been unusually good at that in the last decade or so. We've had a pretty big influx. Rest of the state, not quite as good. And, well, in some cases, not good at all. But again, we need to think about place as a competitive issue for attracting talent. And again, I heard this all around the state, the ability to attract people, very important. Related to place is the resource base. And again, we talked already about natural resources, ag and forest products, still very important as a factor of business in those two industries in particular. And again, an area where, frankly, we didn't believe we're doing nearly well enough in terms of balancing the resource needs for industry and quality of life, and an issue I can come back to, the natural resource policies, if you'd like me to. Finally, and last but absolutely not least, productivity, the ability to, the infrastructure, the business climate in terms of business costs, all very important, and we heard a lot about it. On regulation, we got a mixed reviews. We got some examples where things seem to be getting better. Different parts of the state, frankly, have different reviews in terms of local regulatory climate. Also heard lots of challenging stories about inability to get stuff done. The big one that came out consistently was one I think you've heard a lot about now, is land use and industrial land. But in general, regulation came up. On costs, again, we heard a number of issues on costs, health care, rising health care costs was frequently mentioned, energy in some cases was mentioned, and again, costs in general perceived to be an issue we need to stay focused on. Understanding we're not going to be the low-cost producer, at least on labor costs, but again, not anything to ignore going forward. So, that was a quick overview. The final point I would make in industry interviews was how in some ways the neglected folks felt in terms of the connection with the broader community. And again, it came up pretty frequently of saying, you know, we don't know how we fit into the Oregon's future economy. You know, we don't know if people care what we're doing or what we're about. And a lot of this, frankly, was about relationship building. In many parts of the state, we've neglected the whole economy for a decade, as it's done so well. And a lot of business leaders not sure how they fit in, whether Oregon cares about this, the traded sector clusters. And frankly, in some cases, places, clusters not knowing each other. I remember, again, in Southern Oregon, our meeting, how interesting was the natural resource, the forest products industries were thrilled to be with their peers in other industries, just to getting to know each other and understand they had common problems and common issues. So I think a real hunger right now to connect with you, the public policy leaders, to really have a discussion and dialogue about what we need to do to move forward. Now, with all this that quick overview, what we then did with the circle in mind is we asked in each regional meeting how Oregon stacks up in the point from the point of view of the business leaders, and then and basically the conclusions were that we're really a great place to live, but in all the other three P's they're kind of middling and lots of room for improvement. We also benchmarked how we're doing with the progress board in each of the elements of the circle. And then we came up with a series of initiatives which we put in front of folks and asked them what their priorities were. And we did that in the regional meetings. We did that in individual focus groups. And in the end, the steering committee came up with 12 initiatives, which we present in the report. At the very front, you can see what they are. And they speak to initiatives that we think would improve the performance on on the four P's. And you can see the list here. And what we did for each of those initiatives was put together business leaders to identify opportunities for improvement in each of those areas. In many cases, we took work that was already going on. I don't want to pretend that we invented all this. Most of the time, we just took work which we could find out in the community already to build upon. But we thought by bringing this together in one place, it would help you and help all of us get focused on at least 12 items that could really make a difference if we worked on together. And that's really what those initiatives are all about. Areas where we think we can, as a community, come together and really make a difference in terms of improving performance on the factors that matter to the future of Oregon's industry. And that's what they are. We took those to the Leadership Summit with an initial set of recommendations that we presented there. We posted them on the web. We got a lot of feedback at the summit. We got a lot of feedback on the web. We adjusted the recommendations. And the final report you have in front of you are the recommendations. And again, we have it in two versions. We've got the summary, which has just a matrix, a series of matrices which go through in summary form each of the initiatives. And then if you want a full report, I guess you have it printed out. You can print it out for you. But if you want a full copy of all the initiatives with the write-up, we have those available for you as well. And they all are posted on the web. Just briefly, let me talk through these. The first initiative, which was number one priority in every regional meeting and at the summit, overwhelming, was the fixing the public finance system. And that involves PERS, looking for cost savings, and looking at revenue reform. And again, that's a whole meeting in itself if you want to go through that. But we understand, I think the business community understands, along with the rest of the state, that the public finance system is deeply challenged right now, and this has got to be job number one. The other recommendations really walk around the four-piece circle. The first two speak to pioneering innovation. The OCED recommendations you've heard, we worked with that group and certainly found that work to be very compelling and brought that into the business plan. Recommendations on refocusing economic development department, recognizing that economic development must now be, once again, a statewide initiative. We got to focus on the metro areas and the Willamette Valley along with the rest of the state, and encouraging us to look at these clusters carefully and use that as a way of organizing our economic development efforts. Again, series of recommendations for the department, which we work with the department to develop. Series of recommendations on education, K-12, higher ed, engineering education. Again, those are pivotal, and again, a lot of work in our own the business council in these areas over the years. I think there's still a lot we can be doing to improve those services. Forest practices, forest resources. We don't think we're doing a good job on forest health and forest output. We could do a lot more as a state if we could focus on the opportunity there. Infrastructure, roads and bridges. We think we need. There's a huge opportunity for you right now to improve the road system and also stimulate jobs and encourage you to take advantage of that opportunity, and has a series of recommendations on port and airport infrastructure. In the area of regulation, the number one issue, again, what I wasn't really focused on when we started was land use and industrial land availability. And we've done a fair amount of work, but a lot more to be done there. And again, an area I encourage you to be focusing on this session. On permitting, very complicated area, but again, I think we're committed now to work with public partners to try to find ways to streamline the regulatory system. Recognizing environmental safety goals of the state, we think there are ways to improve it, and again, I think want to work together to try to find ways to make regulations quicker, speedier, and better. And then finally, branding, which actually at the summit turned out to be one of the most popular sessions. We need to really think about what we stand for as a state. I think it's time to recognize once again that we want to be a state with a strong economy that builds on our natural strengths, which include a great quality of life, and sustainable, healthy surroundings. But we need to get back and talk about that image and our branding, and again, I think find a brand that speaks to recruiting, speaks to our products, speaks to tourism, speaks to all of us, and we need to think about branding and positioning ourselves to move forward on the kind of vision we presented in this plan. So that's a quick overview. What we'd love to do is work with you on each of these initiatives. We're right now tracking what legislation and bills are being developed in each of these areas. We'll be posting all that on the web. What we hope is that we see are networks of people working on each of these areas. And what we hope to do is, as far as we can, support those networks, develop, and then report back on progress. We think this is an organizing roadmap, if you will, that I think can help all of us to help move Oregon forward as we look to the next period ahead for our colleagues. So thank you for, again, the opportunity.
Well, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Representative Hunt?
Thanks, Madam Chair. First of all, thanks for tremendous work on this. Those of us who are at the summit, I think, really appreciate the opportunity to participate in that and also just see all the connections that you've made throughout the last year.
Thank you.
It's a lot that's here in a lot of different areas, very comprehensive, which is a good thing, but it's also a challenging thing in a budget challenged time. As I was looking down the initiatives you've got, it looks like seven or eight of them call for some form of additional investment, mm-hmm. basically now, mm-hmm. in the coming biennium. And yet, looking on the resource side, many of them will result in long-term financial benefit, but not necessarily short-term. Maybe help me or help us reconcile where the resources might come from in those seven or eight areas to try and make the short-term investments that are going to be so critical to long-term benefit, but at least which don't seem obvious.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hunt. First of all, I don't envy your job right now, so let me start with that, because I understand how intensely tough this is, so I want to start with that as a basic point. First observation is I would look for things that you think could make a difference in the next biennium and try to get those done right away. Let me give you some examples. A transportation package. Transportation package, if you invested, bonded additional revenue for transportation, got resources out in the field, would generate jobs right away. And that would be good, and that would generate more revenue for next biennium, which would also be good, and, by the way, give you the infrastructure that would also build for the long-term economic success of the state. So that seems to me like a kind of obvious winner that you ought to do. And another example that used, and again, I'm using these as examples, but things that you think could actually do now and make a difference going forward, the tourism marketing package. Again, I haven't studied this in detail, but what it appears is that money invested in tourism not only has long-term benefits, but it's likely to pay you back in revenue next biennium. So again, it costs you actually nothing to put out a tourism package. So I would be looking for investments that could make a difference in the short run. I think actually you need to look at the OCED recommendations in that light as well. I'm not sure if all of these packaged together, you're looking at them, you may well find yourself not only having the signaling that may make a difference even in the short run, and certainly would make a difference in the long run. Which brings me, so I guess my perspective on this is focus on items that will move the economy forward. But then the question you face, and this I mentioned this to the Revenue Committee, is if you do really well at that, you're going to have to understand and think about what that means for your revenue forecast for 2003. Because if you're not careful, you're going to you forecast at one level. If you're successful, the question is, can you generate? Are you going to be able to pay for? Will that revenue be captured? And what I'd recommend on that is something that our chair has suggested, is that you think about a banded revenue forecast. In this time of uncertainty, you may want to have a range where you budget at the low end but have opportunities for additional investment should more revenue come in the 2003-05 biennium, so that you recognize, honestly, you don't really know exactly how much revenue you're going to have, and do everything you can to be at the high end to spark the economy, and then think about having additional investments should that revenue actually come in. So essentially have some contingent budget items to think about. So again, I'd suggest you think about this. Got a longer answer than you probably were hoping for, but I think there are some strategies. And again, what I would, by focusing on the regulatory initiatives, the land use initiatives, some of those may cost a little bit of money, but if they can spark the economy, you may find them paying for themselves, even in the short run. The big ones, obviously, are higher education investments and K-12 investments. Those are huge numbers, which obviously I can't tell you this will work on getting to the K-12 or higher ed numbers you may want to be going for. In both of those areas, all I can say are our recommendations are designed to help you make those systems as productive as you possibly can, and we have a series of recommendations on how to try to get as much as you can for the dollars you invest, but whether that's enough, I can't tell you. I know that's going to be a challenge for you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Richardson.
Sure. Duncan, you said, I can't stress enough the competition. Let's see. I can't stress enough the intense competition we face from China. And then you've mentioned that in mm-hmm. a couple of different ways and a couple of examples.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if much time has been spent on the reverse of that, and that is China is obtaining such a tremendous amount of financial income and revenue from all over the world that we have a billion-plus potential consumers that may want Oregon products.
Mm-hmm.
And so what can Oregon do to help satisfy the needs of this pent-up consumerism over there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Richardson, I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you. And actually, there was an Economist article this weekend, if you haven't seen it, but just making that exact point. I in stressing the competition, again, we respond in global competition by selling more products globally. Oregon companies are wonderful. They're doing a great job in moving products around the globe. And again, many of our companies are now selling large shares of their products outside the United States. And that's great. And that's what we need to be doing. And again, anything you can be doing to help, and I wasn't paying attention to what your bill was on international trade, but international trade clearly needs to be part of the picture here. In terms of helping Oregon companies compete and find markets around the globe, because China will, it's going to be a huge area for demand for products from all over the world, including, I hope, Oregon products. So, yeah, absolutely. I don't want to suggest by saying we've got global competition, we should try to be protecting ourselves from it or anything else. It's just we need to be realistic about what it is and how we're going to compete in that environment. We're going to compete, we hope, by providing leading-edge, innovative products. That's where we want to position ourselves in the Oregon business plan, and that's where we think we need to be, and there'll be a lot of products that can go to China if we do that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you. I look forward to working with you.
We look forward to working with you, and we don't envy our position. Tough times.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
We'll close the informational meeting. And any further business before the committee? Seeing none, we'll adjourn to Wednesday at 1:00.